Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Dugout Debate podcast. The elephant in the room, we've been a bit absent recently. Since we last spoken, we've missed an England Cricket World Cup triumph, an England Rugby World Cup failure, Ben Stokes' Ashes heroics, Megan Rapinoe's battle against the Orange Man, a record-equalling sixth Super Bowl for the Patriots, two of the greatest Champions League semi-finals we've ever seen, one final I won't talk about, Tiger Woods' Masters triumph, KJT's heptathlon heroics, Dina Asher-Smith's searing gold, silver, silver haul in Doha, Arsenal losing a second-tier European final. We're sorry, we missed it, we're back. In more recent and devastating news, we've lost one of sport's greatest exponents in Kobe Bryant in a tragic helicopter crash in recent days. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family, friends and colleagues at this heart-wrenching time, and we'll cover the tragedy in a podcast coming soon. Anyway, today we'll be back talking about a story we covered some time ago, rugby salary caps. However, I think as we all know, there have been some dramatic events in the interim. But first, our panel. Of course, we remember Chris, Jack and myself, but this episode we've integrated a new member into our team, wordsmith, actor and sports fanatic, Will Barrett. Hello, Will.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on, Tim.
I'm excellent. Thanks, Will. We've covered this already. Anyway, on to the matter at hand, the salary cap debacle that's gone on recently. Chris, just give us an overview of what we've missed over the last few months.
Yep, so there's been quite a few different stages of this, but back in November, Saracens were given a 35-point deduction and a $5.4 million fine for breaching salary cap regulations for the previous three seasons. Initially, the club insisted they had done nothing wrong and said they would appeal. This was later withdrawn and the punishment was accepted. But it was not until Nigel Rowe resigned as chairman and Edward Griffiths returned as chief executive of the club that they had admitted their culpability and announced plans to trim down their squad in order to comply with the cap this season. However, on Tuesday, 14th of January, Premiership bosses met in London at a board meeting, and given Saracens had not been able to show evidence that they were going to comply with the cap this season, it was decided that they should face further punishment. According to Exeter chairman Tony Rowe, and this is all alleged, Saracens were given a choice, either to open their books for a forensic audit or accept relegation, and Sarries went down the latter route, accepting relegation. And that is where we are today. Sarries relegated from the Premiership this season.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris. Just as a quick starter, I want very quick fire opinions from all of you. Will, we'll start with you. Do you think the punishment they've received is fair or a bit harsh, or what do you think?
I'm of the opinion that it's entirely justified. I think, make no mistake, this is probably the biggest scandal in rugby union history, certainly recent history. I think it's much, much bigger and far wider reaching than the Bloodgate scandal from Harlequins. I think it draws comparisons with Calciopoli in Serie A, perhaps not quite on the same scale as the doping scandal in the Tour de France, but yeah, make no mistake, it's a big thing. Don't take it lightly.
Jack, I think we know you agree with that sentiment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just the impact on what the other clubs have had to have gone through, with knowing that Saracens have obviously done this for the last few years.
Chris, yourself?
Yeah, I think it probably is on the... It's difficult to try and fit a punishment to the crime like that when it's happened over so many years. And with all of the to-ing and fro-ing where we initially had the points deduction and then relegation, it's difficult to say.
I think we all accept that this is probably at least the minimum that you could probably sanction on Sarries, and going further would be more difficult and more complex for the authorities involved. But yeah, I think shocking is a bit of an understatement.
I think one of the issues is the fact that we obviously still don't know entirely everything that's going on. We know a lot of what's gone on through the salary cap, but I think one of the main issues is when they were asked if they would open their books up to an audit, they wouldn't do this. And I don't know, I think that comes across as quite, I'm not sour, but it's like they're still trying to hide something. So we don't know. I feel like there is still something beyond what they've done. So yeah, I think relegation is totally deserved, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely some more hiding in the woodworks. I think we'll start with talking about, this has been rumbling on for quite a while, sort of when we did our podcast back in 2018, I think it was. We were kind of implying without saying the teams we were talking about, and then I decided to put the thumbnail as the team in question. I think sort of since March, really, we've known that Sarri's have been accused of breaching the salary cap, and obviously they've been found to in the interim. Do you think Sarri's arrogance and naivety since the original allegations in March has contributed to their downfall, Chris?
Yeah, I'd definitely say so. I think it's been poorly managed by Saracens themselves. They would have originally known the findings of what we've now seen in the report. So they, when they first got accused back in November, to then come out and say that we're going to appeal it straight away, I think was a naive mindset to take, and they should have taken a bit of time thinking about that first step. Because now it looks like, as Jack said, that they're trying to hide something, and they thought they still could have gotten away with it at that stage. Whereas now they do seem a little bit more contrite, but at the same time, if they'd made that step to open everything up and open their books, and I think it should go for every Premiership club. I think every club should now open their books as well, just to help repair the league, because Premiership rugby is in such a rocky place. Not only Saracens, but every club should open our books, and we can start from an honest footing for everyone then.
Do you think earlier contrition might have yielded some leniency from Premiership rugby, or do you think the sentence they handed down eventually was always going to pass with the time frame that they had?
I think Premiership rugby took a lot from the report, the people that did the report. A lot of the initial punishment was actually, they said that they shouldn't be relegated in the initial report. So they've only come to the decision they've come to now after that Premiership bosses meeting, as we said, in London a few days ago.
Yeah, from my understanding, like the first thing that was put against them was actually two 35-point deductions that were run at the same time concurrently. So I feel like at that point they were obviously still looking into this whole issue with Saracens, but they knew there was something there. And obviously when they first came out with the statement of what they were going to do to Saracens, they still said that they were reviewing, but they needed to make a comment because of the season starting and everyone knowing about this squad, but also giving them, obviously not much of a chance, but a chance to try to trim their salary cap. Because from one of my understandings is the salary cap amount isn't actually counted until the end of the season. So obviously the previous seasons, it's obvious that they've gone over, and there's an amount that's actually come out to know how much they've gone over by. But until this season is over, there was a chance that they were going to be able to get under the salary cap. Obviously, this didn't happen.
I do feel a little bit, if I might just say so, I do feel a little bit of sympathy with Saracens on that front. I think they were they had an impossible job reducing the salary cap and the amount of time that they were given. Cutting players sort of mid-season, jettisoning them off onto other clubs. No club is realistically going to be able to afford that player if they're within the marginal realms of their own salary caps. And of course, if you terminate player contracts, you have to pay them anyway. So they're kind of caught in the middle, in between a rock and a hard place on that front.
Well, couldn't they have sort of tried to buy themselves time by loaning these players out and saying, okay, we'll pay half the wages if you guys pick up the other half while we sort our house in order? I know that it's not necessarily in the...
I guess they could have done, but if you're looking at losing two or three big earners, half of 750,000 is still a sizable salary for another club to take on. And I imagine if other Premiership clubs are, I'm not going to make any allegations, but if they are quite close to their own salary caps, which I imagine they must be, I doubt they'd have found a home for them anywhere in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a domestic loan, does it? They could go anywhere and play in any of the top teams.
I think we have to remember that they were, in 2016-17, they were over the cap by 1.1 million. And in 2018-19, they were over by 906,000. So as Will's saying, it's the big guys that they're going to have to try and cut to try and get to that level. And those are the guys that need to play in England to play for England.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just about...
You're playing devil's advocate, I know.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Chris, what about Premiership rugby? How much responsibility do they have for this scandal?
I do have a tiny bit of sympathy for them in that, as has already Jack's already said, that they can only look at the salary caps at the end of the season because it's an audit that's done at the end of the season. But I think that does need to be looked at because that has kind of put us in the time frame that then this has all happened during the season, which I think is one of the biggest issues with all of it, that Saracens have had to try and make these changes during the season, and we've had this initial points deduction and then relegation during the season, so no one knows where anyone stands. I'm not sure there's a lot that Premiership Rugby could have done, but it looks terrible because the whole Premiership Rugby season, in effect, has been wiped out by this scandal, and I don't think anyone's really looking at Twickenham in June about who's going to go and lift the trophy. The whole season's been overshadowed by this, quite rightly.
Oh, yeah, no, I completely agree. I've just wondered, they do have a salary cap manager, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Somebody who goes into sort of, it's his job to sort of look at this, and make sure everybody is in attendance. I have a feeling, weren't Saracens sort of slapped on the wrist before back in 2015
That is
with
correct, yeah.
breaches, and it all seems to have been not necessarily swept under the rug, but it sort of went away. There's a big furore, and then it
Yeah, they
just.
had to pay a fine, and that kept it from coming out into the open, which at the time, lots of different clubs then tried to come out and saying we're the clean ones and try and leave it obvious that who the unclean ones
The
were at the
three that didn't
time.
make a comment, basically.
Exactly, but that never quite happened. So I think, as you're saying, well, that whole sweeping under the carpet actually meant that it led to what has happened now, because they didn't stop it before it got worse, really. They kind of, well, they didn't condone it, but they didn't stop it when they had the chance to in the early days.
They've effectively acted as enablers for this whole thing.
Exactly.
That's my opinion. They've acted as enablers by not doing anything real in the first instance. And it's completely the same argument with football. Chelsea's recent punishment, although it's not necessarily 100% to do with FFP or anything like that, like we're talking in the same ballpark of flagrantly breaking the rules and getting a sort of mediocre punishment given their resources and the state of their academy. And it's no different here. Like, they decided to ignore a problem that was present 5 years ago, and now it's completely wrecked their league for a season and for.
If I was going to make a comment on both sides, firstly, obviously Saracens are totally in the wrong here, but for Premiership's point of view, like from what we've learned from the report, it's not as simple as just finding that it's salary. They've been doing it other ways, obviously, and a lot of this is based on an assumption of a value of certain things. And I think one of the ones that I found most interesting, which came out of Sky Sports's report, was the valuation of buying 30% of Mauro Itoje's image rights, which obviously is an assumptive value of someone that's part of that club. And they bought 30% of it for £1.6 million, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so it translates as £800,000 salary per year, wasn't it? Something like that.
But then it
Yeah.
obviously got revalued by either, I think it was Premiership Rugby in the audit, that it was actually his 30% was only worth 800,000.
Yeah, so it was as complicated as the original valuation by Saracens was done by
Exactly.
PwC, and then a whole different accountancy firm then came in and gave a completely different number to Premiership Rugby.
And from understanding, the reason why they did this was because, okay, Mauro Itoje, he's not just one of the best second rows in the country, he's also a Lions second row, and arguably he has the potential to be an England captain. The guy's going to get as much money as he possibly wants, but the money that he's on at the moment, salary-wise, is below market value for the position that he has. So obviously they were having to find other ways of getting around it. And obviously you've got to understand that from a Premiership Rugby point of view, reviewing that is very difficult. However, my argument against Premiership Rugby is the fact that the salary cap isn't something that's new. They've had it for 20 years since the clubs viewed it in. Salary in kind or benefit in kind has been a thing for God knows how long. It's been done in any other aspect. They should be reviewing this and looking out for these like that more, basically.
100%. That's the crux of the argument for me. These are not new allegations, and if you just look at the quality of their squad, surely somebody at Premiership Rugby has gone after 2015, hang on a second, how are they doing this and keeping within the salary cap, especially with the salary in kind argument and all that kind of thing.
It's a massive open secret among the England boys in the camp, who sort of, go around. Everybody joking around. You go to Sar you going to Saracens. What's your wife being paid to be to be a parking attendant, like £300,000 a year. You get your house paid in France. You know, I think it's been a big open secret for a long, long time.
So why has it taken so long to get to this point where we're actually sanctioning? Because if it's been an open secret for so long, surely somebody would have stood up early and gone, hey,
I don't think it's been reviewed. I don't think it's been directly reviewed as deeply as it should have been getting done.
Yeah, but why?
Allegedly, it's taken Harlequins and some other Premiership clubs whistleblowing and trying to give some evidence to them. So obviously the original article came out in the Daily Mail that they were doing this, which for some, I don't know how clubs haven't looked at the company's house info, where we suddenly came out with all these different company names for the Vunipola brothers and Wigglesworth, etc., which weren't exactly cryptic. So I don't know how no one worked out and put two and two together that those were the companies that were being used for this. But as Simo said, it is more complicated than that. Itoji was the one that looks like has benefited the most from it. Mm. And it wasn't just from his image rights. He ended up getting paid for allegedly some hospitality appearances, yeah. But yeah, being paid $30,000.
Well, we haven't even opened you know, Elliot Daly or
Liam Williams,
Owen Farrell. We haven't seen their numbers yet either. I mean, it could be a lot worse.
I think to make an argument for Saracens, the likes of Owen Farrell is going to be tax. He's going to be salary exempt. He will be their luxury tax
player.
That's
true. He could be the marquee. Yeah.
But if I was to make an argument for Saracens, I think if you looked between the 3 years that they obviously went over the salary cap, there is 1 year that they only slightly went over. The reason why they only slightly went over was because they had quite a lot of injuries over that season. And basically, from my understanding, in the salary cap, you are able to cut the player's salary out of your salary cap if the person's injured for a certain period of time. So you can make an argument that obviously they didn't know that all these players were going to be fit, but by basing that, you're also playing with far too many players, and no other club is going to do that. So you're kind of just hoping players are injured.
It's funny because they got close to the cap this season because Liam Williams got injured, so they were able to offload him without him playing a game. But that is, as you said, such a risky game to play. But just going back to how complicated it was, I remember reading an article by Owen Slott in the Times before where he tried to work out everyone's wage and how it'd be able to fit in. And he managed to come up with a squad, but it gets so complicated with academy credits, England credits, etc., that he couldn't work out the exact number that everyone was going to be on. But he thought in his head that they would have been able to fit under the cap because they produced so many players themselves and because so many of those academy products went on to play for England. He therefore thought they might have enough credits to go on top of the salary cap, which meant they were spending 9 million or whatever instead of 7 million, and that they would have been able to, yeah, fall within it. I'm just going to say, hypothetically, this is another question which maybe we might want to cover later, but I don't know whether we then need to look at whether the credits should be more for the players that you produce, because I don't know if they have then had, well, they have had to cheat to try and keep their squad together because they wouldn't have been able to fit it all in. But should they be punished for creating Owen Farrell, Mauro Itoje, etc., and then be in the situation that they'd have to lose them to rivals when really they should really get more money towards a salary cap if they've produced all these players for themselves and England?
I think we were saying about that chap putting those numbers together, it's a classic example of hearing hooves and looking for zebras rather than horses.
Yeah.
Like, the most obvious is that they've broken the salary cap. And if you're having to force all those numbers together in a complicated way, I know there's clever people at every rugby club, but it's probably not happening. And of course, I have to mention Laura Scott, who was the first person at the Daily Mail who sort of broke all this news. And yeah, she's now at the BBC. And I also found your comment, Jack, about, they were only just over the salary cap in whatever year. Oh, I've only just murdered that guy. He only just died, right?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I think...
You've got to make an argument for them, Tim, because nobody's going to.
I'm waiting for a Jack rant in about 7.5 minutes, so I look forward to that. I think we've already kind of touched on this, but... We'll move on to the players and their culpability, because in a recent Five Live podcast, Hugo Monnier seemed to sort of suggest the players weren't really responsible for what's happened. I'm not sure if I agree. Will, do you think the players have any culpability?
I don't really think so. Looking at it, I mean, there is an argument to be made the boys sitting in the changing room looking around them and seeing the quality that they've got on the side and thinking, oh, hang on, something doesn't quite add up here. But I don't think that you would necessarily bandy about exactly what you're making and drill your teammates on what they're making.
I totally agree, Will.
Especially, it's a culture that doesn't really exist in England.
Yeah, we don't talk about wages in any business, do you really?
No,
not at all. So I do have big sympathy for the players in that regard.
But by the same token, we were talking about just, you know, 5 minutes ago how it was an open secret that going to Sarries, your wife was going to get paid loads. Like,
yeah.
Isn't there some sort of moral obligation to go, hang on a second, like, I know I need to be paid as much as I need to, but if my career ends up being completely tarnished with this huge brush of, oh, we cheated because we were paid too much, surely it's in your remit to go, hang on a second, like, is this something I really want
That's
to
the
do?
Key thing. Do we blame the players for not looking at it themselves and trying to put their hands up and say, hey, there might be something wrong here, or just going along with the system because they were winning trophies, they were happy, they were going on these amazing trips away, and they honestly are well treated at Saracens. They're better treated at Saracens than any other Premiership club. The guys have created an amazing culture.
I think that's where the argument is, realistically, is that, I mean, the big argument is, did this make that much of a difference?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, is overpaying the players, is getting in this kind of talent, does that contribute to them winning the titles, or is it in fact their culture and the fact that everybody else in the league is, apart from bar Exeter, is sort of streets away from Saracens in terms of their competitiveness and their drive?
What I would condone...
Jack sort of itching in the back. Yeah. Let's let him get
I'll let Jack go in a second. I was just going to say, I would ask anyone to go and have a look at Brian Moore's Twitter. He did a series of tweets, all in one big thread, of all of the ways that having that many fantastic players in your squad and having that bigger squad would make a difference over a season. What we can't say is that Exeter would 100% have won those titles.
No.
Because Wasps played them in semi-finals and lost, blah, blah, blah. Could have been completely different. So if people are going down the route of, oh, they got to strip their titles and give them to Exeter, that can't happen because there's too many if, buts and maybes.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And to add on to that, I think we've got to understand that, okay, they've not had their titles stripped at this moment in time, but they are clearly tinted, and people are not going to forget this. It's the biggest financial doping issue that they've ever had in rugby. So they're always going to have the issue of, okay, we won these Premiership titles with the squad that we had, but okay, we did it by beating the salary cap or cheating the salary cap. I just wanted to add on one of the other things of the fact that, okay, they obviously had the best squad going in, but if you look at it in any other perspective of going into a job, most people will go to a job if they're going to have getting paid more money, they're going to enjoy their job more.
Yeah.
Obviously, these players are going to a club knowing that they're probably going to get more money, even if they're playing a back role in the squad. Okay, they've got other players with them as well, which makes it more enjoyable, but I'm going to be honest, if you're between 10th and 12th and not getting relegated, you're happily going to go to the team that's going to get you paid more, even if it means you're closer to getting relegated and you've got these clauses to get out. And I think that's just another way. They had a much higher group of people that were enjoying their life so much more because of that.
Yeah, agreed. And to make my position clear, I think on the hierarchy of blame, if we're going anywhere, in my opinion, I'm sure you'll agree with me, it's Sarries at the top of the pyramid, then Premiership rugby, and then the players. But I think it's negligent to suggest that the players aren't in some way culpable.
Yeah, so the players haven't directly talked about salaries because I know they don't do that. Working for a Premiership club myself, I know that salaries are never talked about amongst themselves. But as we've all said, it's known what everyone's on, and behind closed doors, that chat goes on with mates. Oh, it's such and such is going to be on this much. And we know pretty much what anyone's on from the likes of the Rugby Paper, Rugby Inside Line. They leak this kind of stuff of what players are being paid because agents leak it so that they could either get paid more on their next deal. One more thing I just wanted to mention, because you were doing that pyramid there. I think someone who's got away without any culpability so far is Mark McCall. I don't understand how he's not getting any blame for it whatsoever. All of
and
it,
Brendan
all of
Winter.
It, yeah, all of it seems to be at Nigel Rowe.
Just clarify who they are.
So Mark McCall's the director of rugby who looks after the budget. So he's the person that budgets all the new signings and the current re-signings, etc., in the squad to meet the 7 million cap. So he must have some understanding of what Nigel Rowe's doing behind the scenes, because he knows when he goes into a negotiation with a player that he's suddenly playing half the market value of the player and they're still willing to sign. He must know something weird is going on behind the scenes. And for him not to question that, or for him not to know exactly what's going on, fair enough the player's not knowing, but he 100% must know what was happening there.
Would you call for him to walk away then, like Nigel Rowe has done?
Yeah, I think he's been involved in it so much that if they want a fresh slate with this championship run, I think they need a fresh slate and they need to start over again. So that I would say that they need either coaching change, and it looks like there's going to be a mass exodus of squad as well, which will be good for the image of the club, because then they'll be able to start over again.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a danger with sort of making him the fall guy that we sort of... Sorry, Sengo, oh, it was him, he was...
No,
I think there is a danger. I think, you know, obviously Mark McCall must come in for his share of blame, but he can't... There is a danger of making him the fall guy and saying, okay, we've got rid of the problem now.
Yeah.
We're going to carry on as normal.
But yeah, it has to be shared culpability. It does seem to be a systemic thing. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's where most of the culpability is being taken by Nigel Rowe,
yeah,
and
that's what's come with him standing away.
And I just want to amplify this point. I don't think Nigel Rowe is a bad person. I know he's gone and done what he has done, and I can argue that he has done it for the right reasons other than the cheating side of the sport.
Yeah.
You've got to understand that players' careers are very short. And from my understanding, and obviously this is all an assumption, I do think most of the stuff that he has done is to try to help the players have careers outside of the sport after their career is over. But obviously this has come to the case of the fact that it has helped them win the Premiership 3 years.
I 100% agree. And, you know, even taking even his actions in the past week, taking a step down, but also continuing to support the club financially,
yeah,
just shows you that he is, you know, he is a big character, and he does have a big heart. However responsible he is for this, I think that does take some doing, because many people would just walk away in that situation and just leave the club high and dry. So, you know,
as he's genuinely said in lots of his statements, he didn't think he was doing anything wrong. He just thought, as Jack was saying, he's there to support the players. And it's just so happened that they've come down with this ruling now, which means that all of it is wrong. And it has to be done. It is a landmark moment in the league, as we're going to go on to talk about. It means that nothing like this can ever happen again, now that they've finally said that this is wrong. But up till this point, it wasn't definitely known whether this kind of stuff was wrong, because there's been no precedent for the Premiership rugby salary cap manager saying yes or no, which, as we were saying before, means there's culpability on his behalf as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it goes back to the first thing we talked about. It's just naivety,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, surely you cover your back in these situations. If everything is on the line and you're putting it on the line every week, all these guys are risking their bodies, surely you're not going to go, right, I reckon that'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be
fine. I think on that front, I mean, rugby union still is a hugely naive game. You know, it's the youngest flagship professional sport, and these things do take time to iron out and to get right. You know, football, cricket, even rugby league, 100 plus years to sort this. So
and to add to that is rugby union isn't a sport that clubs make profit from. I think
every club is in debt, isn't it?
The only club that makes a profit throughout the year so far is Exeter, and it genuinely comes down to the point of where they're located and the stadium that they have. It generates a lot of income for them.
Well, it's because half their employees are employed by Tony Rowe's other company, they're on the books. They make money.
This is another thing to worry about. Yeah. But like, as I was saying, like, Nigel Rowe hasn't done this to like make more money in his pocket. You can argue that getting part ownership of properties being bought throughout London isn't exactly bad for him, and it's putting asset wealth into his name. But like, Saracens don't make profit, and this is the best, you can argue, the best team that we've seen in the Premiership or even in Europe for God knows how long.
Yeah.
And okay, it's tinted, but it's difficult.
Chris, are you suggesting we need to put Exeter on the curse of the thumbnail list?
No. That's, what they're doing is actually completely legal. So it's not their players, just to clarify, it's not their players that are on the books of Tony Rowe's other company, Southwest Telecoms. It's their other employees, such as myself, if I was a communications executive or manager at Exeter, or I was a physio, I would be officially employed by Southwest Telecoms rather than Exeter Chiefs, and therefore my salary wouldn't be going against the money that Exeter would lose. So Exeter,
obviously this isn't anything to do with the salary cap.
It's just the company making a profit. Correct. So it just looks better for Exeter because they make money, therefore, compared to all the other clubs that don't make money. But just, sorry, going back to Nigel Ray, I think his legacy is tainted, but it shouldn't be forgotten the amount of money he has ploughed into English rugby over the years, and what a fantastic academy system he's created with his money.
Best in the world, without a shadow of a doubt.
How much England have benefited from the academy system that he spent all those millions on. We've managed to get the Mario Itojis, etc. of this world because of the money that he put in. So it is tainted, but I would also like to say a thank you for what he's given us as well.
Second that, hugely. Yeah.
Thanks, K-Bye.
Yeah.
We'll have your money still, though.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right, so anyone dime in with this. What does the future hold for Saris then? What's happening next season? What's going to go on with their players? Yada, yada.
So I think the first thing that we know about is, okay, they're getting relegated. So they are going to be playing in the Championship next year. There is some assumptions that they may have to adhere to the salary cap of the Premiership for 3 years before coming up, but that is hearsay at the moment. It will be interesting because one of the things that I've noticed, I've heard, is Championship rugby license is up for renewal, TV license is up for renewal next year. So Saracen's actually going down, and even if they keep a fifth of the team that they've got, it's still going to be interesting for people to want to watch, and that can only be good for Championship rugby as a whole, as an income to get from TV.
Yeah, massively. On the Saracens' point of view, it's all up in the air how much Nigel Ray and his whole family, what their long-term plans are for the club, whether they're going to stay involved, whether he feels like now he's been shunned away so much that whether it's worth him spending the money on the club that he loves. I know he's committed for the time being, but whether he's going to look for a new owner or not, and obviously the South Africans that were involved at the club before pulled out, so now it solely is him.
That's the scary thing. We don't want what happened with London Scottish and Richmond. They were backed by a rich backer as the Premiership went professional. And when the person, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, bought into, it was Richmond, when they were a top team 20 years ago in the Premiership, they were challenging for the top of the league. And when the owner noticed that the club rugby just wasn't making profit, he literally just backed out, and the club went bankrupt. And inevitably was bought by London Irish. London Scottish and Richmond were bought by London Irish, from what I understand was £1, to pick up their debt.
Wow.
And obviously that is now where, okay, we have now got Richmond and London Scottish back into the Championship, but they had to go all the way back down and start again. Exactly what London Welsh has had to.
I think Saracens will be fine. I think they'll be absolutely fine. I think that, you know, the foundation is there with the academy. I think that, you know, they'll smash the Championship, rest many of their elite players, give them a rest. That'll be a boon for England, especially in the Six Nations.
So do you think they're going to stay then, Will?
I do. I think that as much as we like to vilify Saracens, they do right by their players, and. You know, most of their marquee signings have signed up for, what, four or five years. In order to buy them out of those contracts, it's going to take huge amounts of time and money, which I don't necessarily think is going to work it. So I think they'll find a workable solution. They'll be back in the Premiership, no trouble, really. as depressing as that may sound, I don't think it's going to do Saracens much harm. I think it probably might be good for them in the long term, good for the players.
From what we've heard of the initial report when they first had their meeting with the players, allegedly the likes of Owen Farrell, Mario Toji, etc. said that they were willing to stay with the club through thick and thin. They weren't looking for a short-term loan to go to Lyon's been mentioned in the top 14 so that they could just have the big money for one season and then come back whenever it was that Saracens got promoted again. They seem that culture is deeply embedded in all of them. But the interesting part is that people, and this is what Andy Goode's mentioned on a lot of his podcasts, is whether the culture came as a result of the money first, and the money meant that people were happy before any of the culture started, and the money made it easier. That's going to be put to the test now, because people are going to have to take salary cuts to be able to fit under the salary cap. And the squad is going to be broken up. So whatever team ethos they had before, they might feel that they've been let down by the club, the guys that aren't necessarily involved in any of these deals themselves. They've seen other people take the benefit, and now they have to live with the problems themselves, maybe losing contracts or maybe losing money on their salary. So it is going to be tumultuous for sure, but it's too difficult to predict, I think, what's actually going to happen to the squad. Of course, they're definitely going to lose players, but it is really difficult to say exactly whether they're going to bounce back incredibly strong. As Will says, they've got this academy, which means they will continue to churn out players, but it might not be this generation of players that we see now together. It might be the next generation before we see them back at the top again.
I'd also like to make a comment that, like, I get where you guys are coming from by saying that they have this amazing academy. They also picked up a lot of young players before that they were just peaking, as Bini Vunipola and Maka Vunipola. Neither of them came through their academy. So I just want to highlight, don't get me wrong, they have seriously good players that are coming through their academy. However, they also picked up players before they became the players that they had.
Well, Andy Farrell's the best signing that Saracens ever made, wasn't he? Because that meant that Owen Farrell suddenly slipped into their academy.
Exactly.
Okay, so the salary cap, what's going to happen to that?
Well, from what I've found online, obviously the salary cap that we've had at the moment is the same salary cap that we've had for the last 2 years. So the base level has been at £7 million for the last two seasons. So we can probably make in a safe assumption that it's probably going to rise, because a two-year wait on professional sports people and the incomes that they can make generate elsewhere, it's probably going to rise.
I don't know if you can say that, Simo.
I don't think it... You don't think it can?
No, I don't think it can go up until the game becomes financially viable.
I completely agree with that.
If that means that international stars all go to the top 14 or Japan or wherever else instead, I think we need to concentrate on making the whole league financially viable.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not disagreeing with that point at all.
It depends how greedy, well, the clubs and Premiership Rugby get, in that they're happy to try and plough the money in. But I was going to make the point before, it is sad that rugby, in the state it is at the moment in the club game, is all down to one rich guy taking over a club, and it's on his whim whether he fancies getting rid of it or not, whether the club goes under. That is just not safe compared to what we have in football now, where it's a lot more financially viable because, well, the German model's the best model, as we all know, but it'd be fantastic to have a lot more clubs making money to start with, but also to be fan-owned in some sense, because the whim of some of these millionaires means that they pick up and drop clubs whenever they fancy, and that's just not safe.
Yeah. The only issue is if we do that, we will go backwards for a short period of time.
Exactly. It's whether they're willing to do that.
And we've got to understand that Premiership Rugby has had a humongous investment from CVC, who bought 50% of the rights. So the clubs actually have more money than they've probably had ever.
Yeah.
And that is obviously an assumption, but it was a lot of money.
I was just going to say, especially with CVC now being part owners, they won't want to see it go backwards at all. They'll be pushing for
no salary cap. They will be pushing for no salary cap. They will want to have a league that is probably similar to the French league, in a sense that they have heavy clubs that are happy to invest more and more money so they can generate and bring in the best players in the world. I genuinely think that is one of the things that CVC would like, because...
Well, the great hope is that CVC might bring with their knowledge of F1 and the TV deals they've done there before, that they might be able to bring a TV deal big enough that means that the money that we're talking about is no longer an issue. Because that's the big difference between Premiership Rugby and the Premier League, is the TV deal. But the Premier League no longer have to worry, the clubs no longer have to worry about filling their stadiums every week, because their largest revenue is from TV internationally and at home. Mm-hmm. If Premiership Rugby can do a similar thing with CVC, that means that we would no longer see the problems that we have at the moment. But I don't know. I think that's quite some way off. No, exactly. That's quite some way off.
That's not going to happen in the short term. That's a 10-year exactly. plan if they're feeling optimistic about it. Honestly, my opinion is that's the direction it's going to go, with a no salary cap kind of thing. I think the obvious and easiest solution for the various higher-ups is just to go, right, now, nah, the salary cap clearly doesn't work. We'll scrap it. And, you know, fair competition.
The interesting thing is that obviously the meeting that ended up getting Sarri's relegated that we've been talking about was all of the owners of the 12 Premiership clubs, and they get the final vote on all these things. So they voted for CVC to join in the first place because it all put a nice pretty packet in their back pocket. Mm-hmm. Whether they'll...
Especially if the clubs weren't making profit. Like,
exactly.
Something like that. It just saves
whether,
them.
Whether, because they have to get a majority, whether majority of clubs will vote to get rid of the salary cap, I doubt, because that would only benefit teams such as Bristol or Saracens who are wealthy enough to then go and dominate the league in a Man United style in the early days of the Premier League, where it would become a one or two horse race and not as interesting as it currently is. Whereas this season, obviously, we've got five or six teams, I'd say, that could win the league this year. Now we don't have Saracens.
I also like to add to that point, in that you would see even bigger problems with relegation.
Exactly.
And clubs going down than we've ever seen, which I think would automatically must lead, therefore, to a ring fencing of the Premiership, nobody wants.
I think that's far more likely to happen, the ring fencing, than the losing the salary cap, because the owners would all rather give themselves the security of not losing money when they get relegated down to the Championship. Because as we've seen, it can even happen to clubs like Leicester, where they're now down the bottom, just because of the turnover that the salary cap creates, as we've talked about on other podcasts.
Just to add as well, from a fan point of view, you've got to understand, like, the salary cap actually probably makes it more exciting. It disperses the top players throughout other clubs because they can obviously offer more money.
We saw today the Carl Sinclair news that he was going to Bristol, and that's purely because Quinns can't afford his wage, or they can't afford to match the wage that Bristol can pay him. And that means that those teams lose all those players. Whereas we've seen with Saracens, when they were doing what they were doing, none of their players left because they were able to keep them all because they could offer them these fantastic deals.
Mm. Do you think then that Quinns, do you think Quinns that have certain sympathy now for Saracens in that regard, having to comply with it and losing one of their best assets?
I think the opposite is actually the case, where they feel aggrieved because they've had to live by it for years, and the same has been the same for Wasps, where they've lost players like Elliot Daly, Nathan Hughes, etc., because they can't afford to keep all of them. And that means that when they look over in Sarries and they've not lost anyone, they feel aggrieved that they've not had to live by the same rules that they have. Because it's just a reality at the moment, while we still have a salary cap, that every club loses players. Everyone, I think, is fairly happy with that being the case at the moment, unless they want this system where we end up having one or two teams dominating. I think owners would rather have players leaving that they'd rather not leave, but still be in a competitive league, than have a one or two team dominated league and manage to keep all the players that you want.
Fair point.
So, Chris, what do you think is going to happen to Premiership Rugby then? Do you think salary cap stays the same, goes up, scrapped? What?
As someone that works in the league, I think Will was making the point that from the fans' point of view, they'd all love to keep relegation in there. I think from everyone within the game that works in it, I think the only way that is actually going to become financially viable and we would be able to raise a salary cap or even get rid of it is getting rid of relegation, because at the moment no one can plan for the long term, because they would have to I know from personal experience from when London Irish went down, they had to sack about half of their backroom staff to be able to be financially viable in the Championship. And as Simo knows, they lost countless players. It just completely sets you back for another 5 or 10 years financially and in your squad and
you rebuild.
Backroom staff.
Literally.
Yeah, you have to rebuild completely. If there was a viable second league, if there was a viable Championship, like there is in football, where there's a line of teams that can come up, or in France, the Pro D2 has a line of teams that the likes of Perpignan, Biarritz, that are now down in Pro D2, they're all happy to come back up and compete and pay that money. Whereas now there's only one team ever that goes down and comes straight back up. None of the other sides are happy to do that. And also to add to that, there's only one team in the Championship outside of Newcastle that has a Premiership ground, and that's Yorkshire Carnegie, who are in dire financial straits. So it's just not viable anymore to have promotion and relegation. That doesn't work. And then once we've sorted that out, we can deal with the salary cap going up or whatever. But at the moment, I think it has to stay where it is.
How would you, just a quick point, you make a really persuasive argument there, I have to say. I was just to say, how would you sort it that who gets to stay in the Premiership and who gets to who?
So the way that Super League Rugby League did it before is you had to bid for a licence, and your bidding package for your licence included your stadium, whether it met the requirements, and if it didn't, you can try and move to another ground that would do. Mm-hmm. And also you had to prove to the league that you had the financial capabilities to manage to reach up to the salary cap. And then once they'd looked at your bid, and it's a bit like the financial fair play regulations they do on new owners taking over Premiership football clubs. Once they've looked at your bid, they can see whether you're a worthy addition to the league. Mm-hmm. So it might be if Ealing decide they want to move to another ground and they've got the money and they've proven to the league, they could put that bid forward to Premiership Rugby, and Premiership Rugby could go, okay, that looks like a viable option. We'll include you. And in Super League, it ended up working that you were given, I think it was a 3 or 4 year licence. And then that would then be looked at again after 3 or 4 years, whether all the clubs currently in the league were viable and whether there are any clubs outside of the league that then wanted to make another bid to come in.
Can I make an argument that they've already kind of got this, though, in Premiership Rugby Union, that there is 13 clubs that own Premiership shares?
Correct, yes.
And obviously, is it 13? And obviously, the only club that's outside of the Premiership at the moment that doesn't have shares is Newcastle.
Yeah.
And the funny story, or obviously the biggest story from promotion we've had in recent years and probably will ever have in a long time, is Exeter coming up from nowhere. Mm-hmm. Exeter didn't have Premiership shares. They bought theirs off Yorkshire Carnegie when they were in financial strain. So you can have an argument that there is already some sort of ticket to the top league already.
Yeah, that's right. Just for anyone that doesn't know, those Premiership shares allow you to go to these meetings that we've been talking about, where you do make the decisions for the league. So if you were someone trying to come in without one of these shares, you wouldn't be allowed to go to any of these meetings where the big decisions are made, and you wouldn't be allowed any sort of say. So as Jack's saying, there is already that system in place where there are 13 teams with this golden ticket for the league.
Just to summarise what you're saying, shut the league, probably put Newcastle in it because, you know...
Yeah, it's then the debate is whether you want a 14-team league so that every team's got another team to play on the weekend, or whether you want a bye week system like they have in the NFL.
Which the player welfare people would shout for.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that would be implicated by pretty much every party.
Yeah.
I would just sort of query... It all sounds wonderful. I was just querying that... Once teams can prove that they, you know, can be added to the league,
yes,
like in Super Rugby,
yeah.
I mean, playing for the players playing an extra 4, 5, 6 matches a season, that all does add up on the players. And I'd just be worried that would increase their already huge workload.
Yeah, if you were going to increase the league from 12 to 14, I don't think at the moment it would be viable to go any bigger than 14, because obviously there's the Pro 14 for the Celtic League and the Top 14 for France, which are both proven leagues that 14 teams work. I think for that to happen now, we'd have to get rid of a competition, which I'm not sure, well, Simo might know about it, but the Premiership Cup and the Premiership Shield.
So the Premiership Shield we haven't had this year because the World Cup went. Is the Premiership Shield one of them we haven't had this year because of the World Cup going later, but we do have the other tournament.
So the Premiership Cup instead happened at the start of this season during the World Cup.
As a warm-up,
As a
yeah.
warm-up for the lesser teams, but basically the Premiership Cup acts at the moment as a rest week for your first team, and you play your junior players in it, a bit like a League Cup situation, except it takes one of the weekends, obviously, because you can only play rugby once a week, not midweek. So it'd be to lose that whole competition and replace that with a Premiership fixture instead, and you'd have to get rid of the Premiership Shield, which is the reserve team competition at the moment, which also means players are playing more games than they normally would be. But I think if you got rid of both of those competitions, you'd be able to still have a 14-team Premiership and Europe just as the two competitions, and that should work.
Yeah, you'd expand the squad sort of naturally as a
Exactly.
byproduct of both of those things, and also trim the squads simultaneously, if that makes
This
sense.
seems like the whole podcast has turned into my great ideas for rugby, but if
Chris
it
is
was
leading
up
the
to
way forward.
yeah, if it was up to me, I'd make sure you had to have a mandatory number of 50 people in your squad, and also I'd look into the looking at whether people have to be within certain price brackets within your squad, which people have talked about off the back of this salary cap scandal, a bit like there is in the NFL. Where a certain number of players fit on your 200 grand, say, band, and your next one are on your 500 grand band, and you can fit only a certain number within your squad, but then everyone, it's open how much everyone is being paid, then you know exactly which band everyone is on, which might upset a few players, that is true, but it means that there is that honesty and openness that everyone knows exactly what everyone's being paid. And it also means that your squad's then fuller, so it should mean that players get the rest that they deserve.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the Chris's Great Ideas for Rugby
Of course.
podcast, aka the Dugout Debate. I've enjoyed this. Again, I enjoy when we have chats, but we weren't very good at it. But anyway, we're getting back into it. New year, new us, new decade, loads of podcasts to come. Barrett will have you back, maybe not every week. Maybe not. It depends how much
Oh,
you
I
like
didn't.
it.
Oh, I didn't do well enough.
You can find us on the. You can find us on the Twitter and the Facebook and all that kind of stuff at Dugout_Debate, where we'll put all our things. William's going to start doing some writing, I think. He's going to put it on our website, so he might be on the podcast more, depending on whether or not he does that. He is actually a very good writer and quite eclectic. So go and have a look at our website, and hopefully by the time you listen to this, there'll be some stuff up there. Otherwise, we'll see you again soon for the next podcast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers, thank you.
Cheers, thank you.